Hey y'all, I'm Jeremiah, and this is Christian Anarchy, where a kid can be a kid.
We begin with concluding remarks, break up the pieces and examine the parts. Your words always cut when they're cliche, but here's my knife because I came for the buffet. This is the way it goes when you are part of it. Nervously say words, fiddle surprising bed, a mark beneath the chair.
Congratulations, you've endured another week of whatever it is you do. Hope it was a good one. Today's question is not really one I've ever been asked honestly or personally. It's a question I've wondered about myself to satisfy my own curiosity. And it's also a question I've received from people online, but the way the question is phrased is usually disingenuous. Something like, if your ideas are so good and so consistent, then why aren't more people anarchists? This type of question is usually not from someone who wants a real answer. I suppose, just in case you're occupied doing something else while listening, and the false underlying assumption of the question doesn't jump out right away, I'll bring it up. The presupposition of the question, if your ideas are so good and so consistent, then why aren't more people anarchists, is that if ideas are good and logically consistent, then a lot of people will adhere to them. People have a tendency to think the truthfulness of an idea is related to how widespread the idea is or becomes. On the surface, this sounds like it might be right. I'd certainly like to believe it's right. I want to think that if something is ethical and true, then one need only to share such an idea with another and they will agree. Then the idea will spread like wildfire because of its validity. But any look at history with humility proves this false. Human sacrifice used to be a reality of the world, certainly of at least entire cultures and regions in the world. The idea was considered to be good by the majority of people. There were many individuals even then who said such things were wrong, but it took centuries, perhaps millennia, to get rid of the practice. There's a million different things like this. Was slavery wrong? We'd all say yes now. Was it ethical to get rid of slavery? Yes. Were there many people who spoke out against slavery long before it was abolished? Yeah, but the ideas didn't become widespread for far too long. What about polygamy? Or beating women as a method of teaching them? Or beating children as a way to help them learn? The truthfulness of an idea has very little to do with how many people in the world or in a culture believe the idea to be true. History teaches us it is commonplace to have completely unethical ways of treating other people, so ingrained in a culture, the vast majority of people think such ways of treating other people are right and good. To say the propositions of anarchy are false because not that many people agree with them is an invalid argument. It may have rhetorical power in some circles, but it has no substance. Still, the question remains, why aren't there more anarchists? I think I already touched on one aspect of an answer to this question. A natural part of being human, for better or for worse, is to become like the people and groups around you. It's actually really difficult not to. There is a tremendous internal pressure in people to be similar to those they interact with, or to be different, but only marginally different. Different enough they are seen as an individual in the society, but to an outsider, almost completely the same. Looking at the development of humans across history, it has been historically important for them to belong to a group. Groups provide safety from other groups who may choose to attack vulnerable individuals. Groups also protect against animals who may be predators for humans. Groups also provide collective knowledge an individual couldn't have on their own. They provide community to help with children, to trade with, to lend a hand when times are tough or in case of a catastrophe. They help with hunting and farming and medicine. In the history of humanity, groups have been a very important part of survival. Belonging to a group was thus vital, and fitting in with a group culture to be accepted by the group was an adaptive trait. I suspect also God wanted to create humanity in a way so that they had influence on one another. He wants people to be in relationship with other people, and in those relationships, he wants people to help build, grow, transform, and teach one another. However, we have the first sin coming into the world and messing up everything. So now people don't only have a positive influence on one another, but a negative influence as well. And now the influence of large groups of people can result in the groups as a whole thinking that lies are the truth. It's a corruption of the original purpose of influence. While I may be mistaken about the reasons why people tend to be like the people around them, it's pretty easy to show humans don't generally act or think much differently than the culture they are part of. Think about even mundane and innocuous cultural customs that have no meaning, but people engage in anyway. Like clothing. There's a level of differentiation in a society which is okay, but any significant aberrations are deemed unacceptable. Thousands of clothing styles have existed across history and cultures, but in most places, at any given time, there are about four styles that are okay. You can wear a t-shirt and jeans, or a casual dress, or khakis with a button-up overshirt and fit in. But try wearing a cloak, or an animal hide with bones on it, or simply go barefoot in a store. These styles would be out of line with the cultural customs and would be considered abnormal. It's not just about abnormality. It's not like the only result is people will think, oh, that's different. Some will only do this, but others will actually exclude and think differently and think less of those who wear non-standard outfits. This exclusion and pressure to conform is so powerful, people are actually afraid to go out where they will see other people and not be conformed to the expectations of the culture. They're literally afraid to be different. You'd have to pay most people to wear a kimono to go to dinner and a movie, and they might not do it even then. It's an incredibly superficial and meaningless cultural custom, but the pressure to kowtow to commonality overwhelms most people. This is one of those topics only marginally related to anarchy that I could go on about forever. Watching people bend over backwards because they're afraid of not fitting in is one of the great annoyances of my life. I think, is this really how we want to spend our time and mental energy? Worried about how people perceive us based on superficialities? The answer is nearly always yes, so I try to ignore it and just get on with my life. The fear of not fitting in with social norms is very real and something most people have a hard time building up the courage to break. This desire to fit in doesn't just apply to clothes, it also applies to ideas. Perhaps especially to ideas. Probably especially to ideas. People are very unlikely to hold ideas which are outside of what the society and culture they live in deem acceptable. Just as there is a very narrow range in acceptable clothing, there is also a very narrow range in acceptable ideas. You can think taxes should be lowered. You can think taxes should be raised. Two people might have a strong disagreement about these things, but both views will be generally deemed acceptable. It's like the difference between wearing a polo or a t-shirt. If you say you think taxes are inherently unethical, you may very well have your friends tell you to leave the country, presenting unique ideas that sometimes have difficult-to-swallow implications can be like wearing a loincloth in a room full of people with tuxes and fancy dresses. A lot of anarchist ideas elicit such strong responses. And people are afraid of being different. They are afraid of holding a perspective different than the world around them. A part of this makes sense. I think there's also a healthy natural aversion to unorthodox ideas that run counter to what we've been taught. It's often correct to go along with things that the group believes. Everyone says fire is hot, knives are sharp, stealing is wrong, education is beneficial, etc. The group is right about most of the essential ideas they teach. Very often, going along with the ideas of the group, rather than the ideas of the outsider, the contrarian going against the group, will lead you in the right direction. So it makes sense to cautiously stick with the group worldview for a while until one becomes more convinced the contrary ideas are correct. It's good not to latch onto ideas you've never heard before right away. But a lot of this is driven by the fear of the expression of the ideas being unacceptable to others. It's a fear of being mocked or cast out, considered crazy, We're losing friends because you talked about a topic which was outside of the acceptable range of differences. I'm a weird person. I've been a free thinker most of my life, and have struggled my whole life to fight against when I could, and otherwise ignore, parents, teachers, friends, and other family members who have discouraged my free thinking and free acting. You'd be surprised how much suppression of individuality happens in a world which claims to be a promoter of individuality. I've managed to exist within this world as someone widely considered by those who know me to be a kind, rational, intelligent, and compassionate free thinker. I'm one of the best candidates there is for supporting different ideas than those around me. And still, even with the mass exposure to ideas that the internet allows and makes possible, it took 28 years of life to become an anarchist. Another reason there are so few anarchists is that so few people have had any familiarity with anarchist ideas. I was 26 or 27 before I knew anarchy meant anything but chaos. I thought anarchists were violent people who just wanted the strong to survive. They wanted some sort of every man for himself kind of policy. I did not know they were the most consistently non-aggressive people, other than the pacifists, I've ever come across. It took 27 years of life to even run into people who were talking in real terms about a stateless society. I'm not alone. It's not as if I've been hiding under a rock my whole life. One of my best friends is much older than I. I'm not sure if he still listens to the podcast or not, but trust me, he is super duper elderly. Despite his innumerable years on Earth and a protracted exposure to ideas, he had never heard anyone talking about the possibility of a world without government until he heard it from my mouth. He had never been exposed to well-thought-out ethical arguments against government's existence until a few conversations with me. And he was someone who was skeptical of government for a long time before that. I believe the world would be a very different place if more people were exposed to these ideas from more people and from a very young age. I am quite confident, at least for myself, if I had been exposed to these non-aggressive people regularly, I would have become an anarchist much more quickly. Imagine parents teaching their kids about other perspectives. Imagine people actually having these conversations commonly in various forms of media. Imagine being exposed regularly during political discussions to people who actually have a very strong and beautiful principle supporting their political ideals. Peace. Imagine listening in on your parents talking about politics with friends, and you hear someone saying they think X about issue B because they don't support violence on peaceful people. And then they go on to explain how issue B requires the use and threat of violent force on others. If people experienced the same basic morality they were taught as a child, don't hit, don't steal, applied to political issues with regularity, I think the message of treating peaceful people peacefully would be much more widely accepted. I know a young Jeremiah's brain would have felt much better having a consistent morality explained to him that he could understand without having to compartmentalize in such a way so that the same action was good when a government person was doing it, but bad when a person who didn't belong to the government was doing it. What a crazy and unnecessarily confusing thing to teach our children. But we don't have anything like this world of my imagination. I had parents with no consistent politics other than being pro-war, anti-abortion, and anti-Democrat. That's not to say they didn't have principles guiding some of their ideas, but they never applied those principles consistently. I don't fault my parents for this or think they were bad because of it. I don't want to give that impression. They just didn't know. And they did help me understand and live out solid interpersonal ethics in my personal life. However, I was never taught to apply the basic moral principles I applied to my own life and to the lives of others, to the government. Instead, by those around me, both implicitly and explicitly, I was encouraged to do the opposite. I was encouraged to think about things like the Constitution as if they were magical, or democracy, as if it justified otherwise unethical behavior. I was taught to jump through a confusing mess of hoops to justify behaviors I would never justify in my normal life. And then we have the education system, which is almost completely run by the government. Here is what we should expect from them. We should expect them to seek to justify the necessity of both the government-run education system and government itself. It is in their best interest to do so. And it's exactly what we get. The government-run education system continues to expand, and its outcomes keep getting worse, mind you, and the government continues to expand. During the education you received about the government, did you ever receive a lesson on anarchy? I learned about all sorts of different types of government. I learned about republics and democracies and democratic republics, socialism, communism, fascism, monarchies, all different types, dictatorships, whatever kinds I can think of. They were taught to me and I learned about what they were, what the benefits were, and what the criticisms were. But I was never taught about anarchy. I was never taught about the many societies which have existed historically without a government. I was never exposed to the many economists and political analysts who explain quite clearly and extensively how a free society could exist and maintain itself in our modern world. I also heard many justifications of governments. I heard about how governments are necessary so we can be safe from the dangerous world which just wants to wipe the US off the map. I learned about how governments make the world equal by taking from one group and giving to another group. I was taught about all the rights governments give us. I learned about how government was necessary to stop people from doing drugs and to protect them from evil companies out to kill them with poison-infested food and to just generally oversee humanity and keep things civil. I certainly wasn't taught any ethical arguments against the existence of governments. I only remember hearing justifications for it. But what if I would have been taught about the use and threat of violent force on peaceful people, which is necessary for governments to even exist? Imagine just one chapter in a textbook, just one 45-minute lesson in a class, explaining moral reasons for rejecting government and explaining non-coercive alternatives. I suspect for me, and I cannot speak for anyone else, this would have made a world of difference in my political ideology. What people are exposed to when they are young has a big impact on what they think and how they think when they get older. You know what happens when you get older? Something that is good in some ways and bad in others. The brain hardens. It loses plasticity. People's worldview has formed and shaped their brain, and the neurons become less capable of integrating new ideas. It becomes harder to change the framework for understanding information. The less flexibility these neurons have, the easier it becomes to dismiss new ideas which don't fit into the old worldview, and the harder it becomes to reframe one's worldview to integrate these new ways of understanding the world. Thus, when someone says something you've never considered in your decades of existence, like government is both unethical and unnecessary, it is quite hard to fight the urge to dismiss the statement out of hand without first honestly considering it. In addition to a lack of exposure and fear of the response of society, I think some people are afraid to call government unethical because of what they have to admit about their past. To have supported government in the past and then to call the government immoral now requires someone to admit two things to themselves that can be really hard to acknowledge. One, they have to acknowledge that they have been victimized by the government's use and threat of violence on them to control them. People don't like admitting they were victims. And two, they have to acknowledge they supported an organization which exists by victimizing peaceful people. They have to take some degree of moral responsibility for what they supported in the past. Of course, I think ignorance alleviates a good chunk of this responsibility, but some is still there. For example, in 2004, in my first election, I voted for good old George W. Bush, who loved sending troops to die and kill overseas. And by the estimation of many people, according to international law, he's a war criminal, and I helped keep him in office. I have some responsibility for that, and it sucks to admit to myself, and even to you, to having such guilt. Most modern governments have successfully intertwined themselves so thoroughly into every aspect of society everyone benefits from them in some way, shape, or form. This, of course, doesn't mean they are a net benefit, but that even if they are a net destructive force on society, they've managed to provide something every individual values and finds useful and beneficial. If people can point to very real areas they are benefiting from the government, it's going to be a struggle for them to see government as an evil organization. Roads are a great general example. Everyone in the U.S. uses government roads, and most people benefit from the use of government roads. Roads make things more efficient, and it can be hard for some people to acknowledge the reality that you can still have things like roads even if the government doesn't provide them. And benefiting from the government, of course, doesn't make their existence moral. Businesses paying the mafia for protection benefit when the mob prevents other businesses from moving into the area. But this doesn't make the mafia's actions ethical. It's the same with the state. Benefiting from something the state does doesn't justify their actions or their existence. Some people aren't anarchists because they are flat-out arrogant sociopaths who don't care about humanity. This is a tiny minority, but such people exist. Some people just want power. They don't care about treating every human with dignity. They are just looking to get theirs, whatever theirs is. They benefit from the government so much, they would never consider anarchy, no matter how ethical they thought it was. And some people aren't anarchists, because they are flat-out arrogant people who do care about humanity. They care about people and want the best for them. And they are proud enough and self-centered enough to think they know what's best for everyone. They are so full of hubris, they are willing to initiate violence on a whole nation in order to force others to obey their will. They think they know what every individual should and shouldn't put into their own body. They think they know what the best way to build a road is, or protect people, or educate children, or defend someone else's property, or how they should run their business, what kind of car they should own, what choices they can make about their health care, how much money they can make, or who they can hire. To be so confident about any of these things, a person is willing to use violence to compel others to adhere to them, is pompous. Statism, that is, supporting the existence of government, is by its very nature conceited. Compared to statism, anarchism is the humble position to take. I'm not saying anarchists are a really humble group, or that I'm necessarily a really humble person. I simply mean the ideology itself is one of humility compared to the arrogance inherent in supporting the state. An anarchist has some ideas about what the best way to live is, and they may try to convince others of them, but they want to talk about such things in order to convince, persuade. They aren't willing to coerce. Anarchists are humble enough to recognize they don't have the necessary foresight, knowledge, understanding, or right to impose their will on other people. The ideology itself insists even its best adherents, especially its best adherents, take no position over another person. It insists upon treating fellow human beings like equals, treating one's neighbor the way you would like them to be treated. And I don't know anyone who wants another person to force them to do something they don't want to do. So those are some reasons why more people are not yet anarchists. This is yet another topic I intended to be short that turned out to be way too long. I have way too many thoughts. I will try to think less next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me today. If you want to contact me, my email address is jeremiahjm@gmail.com. Or you can visit my website at www.christianarchy.net. There you can find past episodes, a link to resources, and find other ways to contact me. If you're enjoying this podcast and it's important to you, feel free to share it with your friends. Maybe even feel a little bit obligated to share it with your friends. If you want to help out at all, one very simple thing you can do is leave a review on iTunes. Give it as many stars as you think it deserves, but I think it deserves at least 2 for courage and maybe 3 for consistency and 4 for the handful of times it's made you chuckle to yourself. And the fifth star, well, I guess we'll leave that up to your discretion. Enjoy your week, make it full, and make it meaningful. Peace and love.
Into the dark, your words, the melody that carries me.